Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Bhakti Shastra Nectar of Instruction. Today we'll start with text 4. In the fourth text, Rupa Goswami talks about association. It's the first verse, and this theme will go on in the next verses. The connection is that in the previous two verses he has talked about association, and the emphasis has been on avoiding bad association and taking good association. So now, how do we take good association? That is described in this mantra, in this particular verse. So let's look at them once. So dati pratigrahanati guhyam akhyati prichyati bhunte bhojayate chaiva shadvidham priti lakshanam. So dadati pratigrahanati. Dadati means to give, pratigrahanati means to receive. Grahan, grahakarna. Accept. So guhya is confidential. Akhyati pruchyati. Akhyati means to ask, and pruchyati is to hear. Bhunte bhojayate chaiva. Bhunte is to receive, to eat, and bhojayate is to feed others. So bhojayate is like bhojana. So one is to enjoy. Now the word bhunte often means enjoy. So actually devotees can be happy in taking prasadam, that's not wrong. Bhungte bhojayate chaiva, we'll discuss about that. Shadvidham priti lakshanam. Priti lakshan, priti is affection, lakshan is symptoms. So these are the six symptoms of friendship. It's interesting that bhakti is an inner cultivation. And yet, while describing how one can go about in practicing bhakti, Rupa Goswami delineates specific activities which may seem to be external. Giving gifts, receiving gifts is external activity, you may say. And eating food, drinking food, that may also seem to be external. Say, okay, talking about our hearts, that is internal. But that may be a little more internal. But what about the others? Actually speaking, no, for us, we live in the world, and we look through our eyes at the external world. When people see us, they first see us externally. And in many cases, people see us only externally. Now, among thousands of people who see us during our course of life, how many people can see our heart? So, external behavior, external actions are also important. Now, in a later verse, he will talk about how we should not be stuck with the external vision, and we should so devote spiritually also. But externals are not unimportant. They are important. And bhakti, the bhakti culture, that way if you wanted to talk about externals negatively, we could say the bhakti culture is filled with so many externals. The way we wear tilak, we wear dhati kurta or saris, we wear kanti mala. So there are so many external things that we do. Why do we do that? Because the external helps in accessing the internal. So when we want to interact with other people, other devotees especially, how do we do that? That what is in the heart has to be expressed externally. And when it is expressed externally, then that expression becomes understandable and relishable for others. Otherwise, it is not even accessible, leave alone understandable or relishable. Accessible means one can contact it. Understandable means intellectually one can grasp it. Relishable means at the heart's level we relish it. So what is in the heart is not even accessible to others most of the time, leave alone understandable or relishable. That's why the heart's affection has to be expressed. So that's why he uses the word very clearly, Rupa Goswami, lakshanam. These are the lakshanas, the symptoms of priti. So priti has to be in the heart. If priti is not in the heart, one can do these six things superficially also. That's possible. But even if priti is in the heart, how will others know that the priti is there? These things have to be done. And so the externals of bhakti should not be dismissed as rituals. That, oh, these are just rituals, why do them? No, they are the ways in which affection is expressed. And then affection is received by others. That's why it's extremely important that devotees follow the culture, and this is a very important part of the culture. So we will discuss this verse based on Srila Prabhupada's purport, and we'll look at also parallel instances from especially Chaitanya Charitamrita, because the bhakti culture is most directly demonstrated, especially in terms of relationships among devotees, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So therefore, let us move forward. Now Srila Prabhupada, look at the translation. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and offering prasad are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. So the six ways in which loving exchanges are done. Symptoms of love. Let's look at the purport. So, purport can be divided into various parts. Whom to associate with, where to associate, that is within Krishna consciousness movement is gone. Then how and why. And then there's one whole section on why we should, with whom we should not associate. So, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of how relationships are formed even in material life. When, say, the head of state, Prabhupada gives the example of a businessman. I'll give a similar example from, say, the political scenario. When, say, the head of state of one country visits another country, what does the second country do? They honor a banker in his honor. So they have a big feast, and then many VIPs are there. And then they sit and talk with each other. And that's how relationships develop. So what essentially happens is, maybe if they want to develop some relationship, then this the visiting country's head of state, the visitor, visiting head of state, will bring some memento, some gift, and he will give to the host head of state. The host will give some gifts. They will have a big feast together, and they will talk about matters of mutual concern. Now, for them, their mutual concern may be national. You know, my nation, your nation, what are the areas of disagreement? What are the areas of possibility of increasing relationships? And these talks can be of pivotal importance for political consequences. So therefore, this is the way reciprocations happen. Relationships happen this way in life. So, generally speaking, the way is that these six activities that Rupa Goswami has talked about are universal. That everybody does these activities. It is not just devotees. But when devotees do these, then they can bring Krishna into their hearts, into each other's hearts, and they can both move closer to Krishna. So the principles of living, many of them are similar for devotees and non-devotees. But the purpose of living is different. Now, devotees eat food, non-devotees eat food. The principle is the same. Everybody has to eat food. Devotees have to work to earn a living. Non-devotees have to work to earn a living. Devotees have to... devotees maintain a family. Non-devotees maintain a family. So many of the activities are similar. The principles are common, but the purposes are different. By principle, I don't mean a philosophical understanding. By principle, I mean just the fact that we have to do those activities. But the purpose is different. So these six ways in which people exchange affection, these, when devotees apply it, then there can be very affectionate relationship. And Srila Prabhupada, in fact, goes to the extent of saying that the Krishna consciousness movement is nourished by these sixfold exchanges between the devotees. So this is a profound statement. Generally, we may think of the sixfold Krishna consciousness movement as meant for sharing Krishna consciousness with the world. Yes, we want to conduct programs and want to give we have classes and many people becoming devotees, many books being distributed, temples being built. Yes, these are important. They are definitely important, and they are signs of the vibrancy of the Krishna consciousness movement's health. But at the same time, what is the essence? What do we want after people come to the temple, after people come to Krishna? What happens after that? Well, they have to develop loving relationship with other devotees. Our heart gets connected with Krishna not through some mystical visions that Krishna suddenly reveals to us. Our hearts get connected to Krishna by getting connected to his devotees. स्वप्रसङ्गमजरं पाश्यम् आत्मनः कवयो विदुः सैव साधुषु कृतो मोक्षद्वारमपावृतम्. सो इट्स् डिस्क्राइब्ड् इन् दि श्रीमद् भागवतं थर्ड् केण्टो दट् प्रसङ्गं. प्रसङ्गं मीन्स् अटाच्मेण्ट्. सङ्गप्रसङ्गम् अजरं पाश्यं. द पाश् द न्यूस् आफ़् अटाच्मेण्ट् इस् अजरं. जरा इस् ओल्ड् एज्. Ajara is that which never grows old. So the attachments to material things are such that they never grow old. In fact, we see our bad habits. The older they get, they don't get weaker. They get stronger quite often. They never grow old and weak. The longer a habit has been there, the more difficult it is to give up. So material attachments are ajaram. Prasangam ajaram paasham. The atmanah kavayo viduhu. The wise people know that attachment to the material is almost impossible to break, to give up. But then, sa eva sadhushu kruto. If that same is directed towards devotees, towards sadhus, then moksha dwaram apavritam, and the doors to liberation open. So, it is by attraction to Krishna's devotees that we develop attraction to Krishna. In other words, sadhu doesn't necessarily may have to mean the spiritual master, a sannyasi guru. It can be any advanced devotee, any person, male or female, grahastha or sannyasi, whoever inspires us to develop our love for Krishna, to increase our service to Krishna, that can be a sadhu for us. So it is by attraction to Krishna and his devotees that our love for Krishna gets nourished in a practical sense. So when people come to the temples, what is that is going to happen to them? What should happen is that they become attracted and connected with devotees at a deeper and deeper level. And through that, they move forward upwards towards Krishna. So, we associate with devotees. Now we see in ISKCON, what do we actually do? We have hearing and chanting. That is, in a sense, Guhyam Akhyati Prachyati. Actually speaking, the Bhagavatam class that is there, the Gita classes that are there, the various programs that are there, they are not just philosophical classes. Philosophy is very important. And when we say Guhyam Akhyati Prachyati, so that what is actually happening is the devotee speakers are sharing their understanding, their realizations, and how they have internalized, applied, and relished Krishna consciousness. And that's what makes the philosophy come alive. No, the scripture lives through those who live the scripture. We can study the scripture at home also, but the scripture as a living reality will become manifest when we associate with those who are living the scripture. So when we come and hear classes, it's not just abstract philosophy that we are hearing. The philosophy is spoken through devotees who are living and realizing and relishing it. And that's how the classes come alive. Now if the Bhagavatam class is treated as a ritual, or the class or weekly program that we go to are treated as rituals, or the speaker thinks, oh, I have to go and speak something, and the audience thinks, oh, I have to go and attend, then not much of the reciprocation will happen, because the heart is not put in that. Only when the heart is put in it, then there is the joining of both hearts centered on Krishna. So, the speaker speaks and the audience hears. And the wonderful thing about bhakti is that the advancement depends on the individual sincerity. Now, even if the audience is very inattentive, but the speaker is speaking sincerely, diligently, wholeheartedly, and the speaker, by that intense desire to glorify Krishna to the best of one's capacity, will experience Krishna, will relish Krishna, and will make spiritual advancement. We see it with Sanjay. Sanjay spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita earnestly to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra's heart didn't change. Dhritarashtra still wanted the fight to go on. But what happened? Still, although his audience was not transformed, what happened to Sanjay? Sanjay was relishing. Sanjay, in the last 76th and 77th verses, that is the second last and third last verse of the Bhagavad Gita, he described that Rishami cha muhur muhur, Rishami cha punha punha. So I'm relishing it again and again at every moment. As I remember Krishna's words, I remember Krishna's magnificent Virat Rupa, I'm stunned. I'm thrilled. really sing.
So,
you know, even when there is an intention to glorify Krishna with sincerity, that itself brings some joy. And even if sometimes the speaker is not very serious, speaker is not very advanced, but the audience has a sincere desire to hear and learn, and the audience will get realizations there also. Krishna will arrange that. So, of course, if both are sincere, then that is the best. Then the reciprocation becomes very rich and very fulfilling. So this is how. So this is one activity that we do. That we do Dati Guhyam Akhyati Pruchyati. And then there is also Bhungte Bhojayate Jai. Srila Prabhupada would say that whenever we have any program, we always have prasad. Even in the early days of the movement, when there was nothing available, Prabhupada himself was having very little money, then Prabhupada would at this get an apple and cut the apple. And he would offer one small piece of apple, he would offer the apple to Krishna and give one small slice of apple to everyone. But he said, this principle is we always have some prasad after the program. And of course, prasad is the way we express affection. And in fact, prasad is the way in which, you know, Krishna enters into the lives of most people. Krishna enters into their stomach first, and from the stomach he works his way into their heart, and he captures them. And so, this is Krishna's transcendental journey through our bodily anatomy. He enters the stomach, and then from the stomach he moves to the heart. And many devotees become attracted to Krishna because of prasad. So this is very important, as we know that Krishna consciousness is often known as kitchen religion. Now, Srila Prabhupada's earliest disciple was Kirtanananda, and he was a good cook. So Srila Prabhupada called him as Kitchen Ananda, he said. So Prabhupada himself loved to cook. You know, Hegri Prabhu writes that in his book, The Hare Krishna Explosion, he writes that when Prabhupada started cooking, we discovered that he knew so many recipes. We felt as if his knowledge of cooking recipes was as vast as his knowledge of Sanskrit verses. So many recipes in you. Then one time we asked Prabhupada, when did you learn all this? So Prabhupada said, I learned by observing my mother and asking my mother. So Prabhupada considered a very important part of the culture. He himself cooked, then he taught his disciples to cook. And especially at one time there was Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's appearance day celebration was there. And at that time, the devotees said, okay, today is a weekday and not many people will come. So we have scheduled the program in the evening and then we'll have the cooking. That was what the devotees had planned. But then Prabhupada, as the morning program got over and noon there was going to be, Prabhupada was expecting Pushpanjali to be there. So how is the cooking going? How much are you cooking? What all are you cooking for my spiritual master? So the devotees said, Prabhupada, we're not planning now, we're planning the improv. Then what? He said that the spiritual masters, Vyasa Puja should be celebrated at noon. That is the way the convention is. And Prabhupada himself went and started cooking. And single-handedly, Prabhupada cooked dozens of items, just 2 hours, all high class. And then Prabhupada himself led the aarti and he spoke about his spiritual master. And then he went to his room, took a little prasad and saw how all the devotees were relishing the feast also. So Prabhupada considered it that offering the bhoga on the holy day of his spiritual master as a way of expressing his gratitude. And the gratitude is also one way of affection. So it's important. So this is another thing that happens. And the dhati pratigrahanati. How do we do this? Actually, devotees can and should give gifts. So for example, on many of the festival programs, you know, some people come and give some sponsorship. They may sponsor the prasadam and then they are given some gift. So this is affection. This is reciprocation of affection. And this reciprocation of affection is what enables people to relish Krishna consciousness. Without that, Krishna consciousness will be very dry. Now, if we look back, actually, this is our culture itself. If we look at Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, or even if we look back further to Srimad Bhagavatam, what do we see? That the culture is when Sudama is requested by his wife, please go and ask Krishna for something. So both of them feel that if we are going to Krishna, we should give him something. So actually speaking, Sudama is a poverty-stricken Brahmin and Krishna is the king of Dwarka. You know, whatever Sudama gives will be nothing, practically speaking, for Krishna. But still, it's a way of expressing affection. So although in a sense it was valueless, for them it was extremely valuable because they considered it the way they will express affection. So the only way they could express affection at that time was offering some rice, some flat rice. So when they took that chipped rice and they gave it, now Krishna did not see just the chipped rice. Krishna saw the affection over there. And he relished it once, twice. And Rukmini Devi finally stopped him. He says, "You have satisfied, by your taking this, the whole universe has been satisfied. Enough, my lord." So, you know, out of her love for her lord, she wanted him to eat the most opulent foods. And she could not tolerate the simple chipped rice Krishna eating. But she also understood that this is Dama's affection being expressed. So Krishna himself valued it so much. He saw that actually, so there in this we say Dadati Pratigrahanati and Bhungte Bhojayate combined together. Now for him, Sudama offered the chipped rice, and that was an eatable item which he also offered as a gift. And what did Krishna do in return? Pratigrahanati. Krishna gave him a huge palace and abundant wealth. And so we see this reciprocation even among in the Bhagavatam. So that is how the relationships get nourished. Now if we come to Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see repeatedly this is how the Lord Chaitanya actually thickened the relationships between devotees and himself. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 24 years of his life, he was in Navadvip perform, and almost from the age of 20 he started the Harinam Sankirtan. Before that he was playing the role of a scholar more or less, a few years more or less. But after he did the Harinam Sankirtan, from 24 to 30 he travelled around, did preaching. And then from 30 to 48, it seemed as if he stopped preaching only, because he stayed in Puri. And certainly many great scholars and great devotees came to meet him from there. But he did not go around and preach so much, it seems. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a Yuga avatar and had come to teach the Yuga Dharma. Then why is it that he did not preach in the last 18 years of his life? Now ultimately, the Lord has his own sweet will and his sweet plan. But we see what the Lord did and how that also contributed to preaching in a phenomenal way. What the Lord did was, he reciprocated love with his devotees. And through that, he entered into their hearts. And when he entered into their hearts, through that, he actually perpetuated the Krishna conscious movement, because they all wanted to please him afterwards. So we see the six Goswamis, how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had loving exchanges with them. Raghunath Das Goswami, when he came and stayed, after getting away from his family, when he came and stayed in Puri, at that time, Raghunath Goswami would take some very simple food. All of us know the austerities that he would perform. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took that food once and he felt, this is sweeter than nectar for me. This is better than all the bhogas that I have eaten. Because in it was the renunciation of Raghunath Goswami. Now of course devotion was there, but that devotion was enhanced by his extraordinary renunciation. So now, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with him. What did he do? He gave him a Govardhan Shila and a Gunjamala. So now that small necklace sort of thing and that small Shila stone. Now from the material point of view, they're a stone piece and a small necklace, not of jewels, it is of simple items. That's not considered very precious or even much valuable. But for Raghunath Das Goswami, it was an eternal gift. It was such a precious gift. It was millions of times more valuable than all the wealth that he had renounced. Because this was directly, he felt as if this Govardhan is Krishna and that Gunjamala is actually in a sense Radharani. So the Lord is giving him the divine couple. So this was his mood. And he felt so grateful to the Lord. So by that act of giving that gift, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered into the heart of the devotee and he stayed in that heart forever and ever. That was how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu attracted the devotees. And similarly, what did he do to Sanatana Goswami? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Sanatana Goswami came along the way, Sanatana Goswami, he got some infection because of contact with some polluted water, and his whole body became covered with boils which gave out a nasty pus. So he wanted to stay away from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come and embrace him again and again. And in this way he was showing his affection to him. And that affection was what won Sanatana Goswami's heart. And eventually one day, Sanatana Goswami felt like, oh, I am contaminating the Lord's body. How can I stay here like this? So he talked to Jagadananda Pandit. And Jagadananda Pandit said, yes, the Lord has given you and your family Vrindavan. Now you have stayed, you have seen the Lord. Now you can go back to Vrindavan. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, Sanatana Goswami said, I am planning to leave, my dear Lord. He said, who has said this? He said, Jagga. So he said, who is the Jagga to give you advice? He said, you are so learned, so advanced that even I can take advice from you. That Jagga is just a small boy. Who is he to give you advice? So Sanatana Goswami, they had such a loving affection. Sanatana Goswami said, my dear Lord, those whom we love, we chastise. And those who are a little distance from us, then we respect, very, very respectfully deal with them. So he said, you are giving Jagadananda Pandit the nectar of your chastisement and you are giving me the bitter juice of your respect and praise. So Sanatana Goswami said, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt embarrassed. And he said, I love you very much, but I cannot tolerate the breach of Vaishnava etiquette. How can Jagadananda Pandit give you advice? I love you very much. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came like this and he embraced. And when he embraced him by that, Sanatana Goswami's body got mystically cured, became effulgent, and all the pus just in one moment disappeared. And Sanatana Goswami folded his hands at the amazing miracle and he said, my dear Lord, what you have done is extraordinary, but I see this whole part of your leela. It was by your arrangement that I got those boils, and now by your merciful arrangement, you have removed those boils. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by showing his unflinching devotion, his unflinching love for Sanatana Goswami, won his heart. Similarly, with Rupa Goswami also. When Rupa Goswami came there to Puri, what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one day came along. So, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, because they had become Muslims earlier at the Birkas and Sakarma Lake, so they considered themselves even now lokas, although they were not the most exalted of devotees. So they would stay away from the others, away from the temple at Siddha Bakul, where Haridas Thakur was staying. And while they were living over there, at that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come and meet them. So one day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he saw Rupa Goswami had written this verse, Tunde Tandavini. He was so pleased. Now generally, you know, there are different levels of pleasure and these are also expressed by ways we express it, you know. Sometimes when we praise a person or somebody praises us, you know, that might just be because of flattery. Right in front, you know, this person is there, I should speak something good about him. It might be flattery, even if it's not flattery, it might be obligation. You know, he's a senior person, so I have to speak something. But suppose there is one devotee, there is this devotee Krishna, there is one devotee A, B and C. So if B glorifies A in front of A, then that is good, at least we are following the etiquette, appreciating. But if B glorifies A in front of C, that means in front of somebody else, then that means that person really appreciates. And because that person really appreciates, if after a class we go and tell the speaker, that was a very nice class. That's good, but the speaker is right in front of us there. We are there and we are expected to speak something, so we may speak. But after the class, we go and tell, hey, you heard today's class, it was so good. This point was good. So then we appreciate to a third person, then that means the appreciation is actually very genuine. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not only spoke this, appreciate this Tunde Tandavini verse, this verse which says that, you know, there is so much nectar in the holy names. I do not know kiyat bi amritai krishneti varanadvai. I do not know how much nectar is there in the holy names. Tunde tandavini ratamutanate tundavali labdhaye. He says, I feel as I want thousands of mouths and I want crores of ears. I just want to relish the holy name through my tongue and my ears. And when the holy name enters into my heart, it just dances in the courtyard of my heart and all senses become silent. They become inert. They lose all their vicious enjoying mentality. And in this way, he says that I don't know how much nectar is there in the soul. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I have never heard such glorification. Das Thakur also said, I have never heard such glorification. So happy. And then after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to Swarup Damodar. He said, how is he able to understand this? He says, because you have given your mercy. So he said, yes, actually. And I saw how humble, how sincere, how diligent they were. When I met them in Ramkiri, I felt they deserved my full mercy. That's how I have given. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not only himself said that I have given mercy, but then he took Rupa Goswami in the association of, to the Sangha of all the senior devotees. So there Swarup Damodar was there, then Swarup Damodar Goswami was there, then Ramanand Rai was there. And these are in Puri, the most intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Rupa Goswami was brought among them. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told them that, you know, he is such a wonderful devotee. Please, all of you, bless him. And then he said, please speak some of your poetry. So Rupa Goswami was very embarrassed. How can I speak my poetry? Whatever I have written. He said, no, you speak it. And then Rupa Goswami spoke it. And all of them were so happy. And they all heard his poetry. Advaita Acharya was there. And all these senior Vaishnavas, the intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Rupa Goswami, in one sense, like younger generation. Although Rupa Goswami was also elderly in terms of age. But he was one generation younger. He was like a disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whereas all these were associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They also, of course, considered themselves to be servants. But they were like on that level. And Rupa Goswami was like a junior. So they had all been devotees more or less throughout their life. And they were all very intimately associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they all heard his poetry, appreciated it, glorified it, and they all profusely blessed him. So it's one thing to appreciate a person. It's quite another to take that person in the association of devotees, the Sangha of exalted devotees, and appreciate that person publicly and get everyone to appreciate. So here what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doing? He's actually Guhyam Akhyati Prichyati. You know, when he's telling yes, when he's asking Swarup Damodar, you know, how is it that he has understood my heart? How is it that he has understood such intimately the glories of the holy name? He says, it's because you have given your mercy. This is an example of heart-to-heart communication. Heart-to-heart communication is essentially what Guhyam Akhyati Prichyati is. Heart-to-heart. And by such heart-to-heart communication, the Goswamis found their hearts completely pervaded by Krishna, by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. And they were far away from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, we see that Goswami's meetings with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were very few. They did not meet him for very long. If we look at most of the Goswamis, except for Raghunatha Goswami, who stayed in Puri throughout the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the later life, and for several years he was there. All the other Goswamis, they met Chaitanya. There was one meeting initially at the time when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu transformed them, converted them, and recruited them. He told them all, you go to Vrindavan. And after that, the meetings were so scarce. Practically no meetings only. But although there were almost no meetings, but still, what essentially happened was, there's always a meeting in the heart. Always a meeting in the heart. So actually, all the Goswamis had not yet reached Vrindavan when these six Goswamis, not yet the five, Raghunatha Goswami was in Puri. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself went to his Vrindavan Yatra, at that time the Goswamis had not yet settled in Vrindavan. And after that one tour to Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never again spent to Vrindavan. And the Goswamis spent their whole life in Vrindavan. So they occasionally would come to Puri, but it was a huge distance coming all the way from Vrindavan to Puri. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given them a mission in Vrindavan. So they stayed there to fulfill the mission. But even in the small meetings that they had, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered deep into their hearts. And they cherish those memories. So this is how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu nourished the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya through loving exchanges. And the Goswamis were like his primary successors in terms of systematizing the Sampradaya. And that's what, through their writings, they did. And how did he inspire them? At one level, we can say he's God. He's in there in everyone's heart and he can inspire anyone and everyone. That is true, definitely. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also demonstrated, you know, how it is to be done practically. And he showed such intimate, loving exchanges with his followers. And through that, he won their hearts. And he forever stayed in their hearts. So This is actually the essence of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada himself was also a genius at this. Now he was so busy, but Srila Prabhupada was always looking for opportunities for loving reciprocations. So, you know, at the place where in the early days of the movement, Srila Prabhupada was practically all alone trying to share Krishna consciousness with people. And then he was in New York and there was a bookstore where Srila Prabhupada had kept his books, and he would periodically go there to ask, oh, how many copies of the books been sold, and if any books had been sold, then he would take some commission from there. So one day, as they were so when he would go there, because of an elderly man, so the store in charge, it was a lady, she would talk with him. And one day casually she mentioned that, actually, she said that, I like Indian samosas. She had just heard a little bit of Indian cuisine. He said, I like this Indian item. And immediately next time, when Srila Prabhupada came, he brought a big tray of that same favorite item for her. And she was so amazed. And she took it very joyfully. So what was Srila Prabhupada doing? You know, every opportunity he could have, loving reciprocations, he would do that. So Srila Prabhupada was a person who very much was conscious of Vaishnava etiquette. And that's how he would share Krishna consciousness and take Krishna consciousness deep into the hearts of his disciples through the sort of loving exchanges. Now, let's look at each of them. So I've just discussed now the whole tradition, how this is such a part of is a rich part of our tradition, having intimate exchanges. Srila Prabhupada's purport explains how we do it in Krishna conscious movement in general. And I will focus on how we can do these in a greater detail. So, dadati pratigrahanati. Dadati means to give, and pratigrahanati is to receive. What? Gifts. Now, when we give gifts, there are two aspects to the gift. There is the intent of the gift, and there is the content of the gift. The content means what is it that we are giving. And the intent is with what intention we are giving. So the intent and the content both are important. In the path of bhakti, actually the intent is more important than the content. That's why Krishna says in the Gita that I will accept even patram pushpam phalam toyam. I will accept even a fruit, a flower, a little water, or a leaf also, if it is offered with devotion. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati, bhaktya prayachati, with devotion is offered. And the word bhakti, as we know, comes twice. Tadaham bhakti upaharitam, bhakti upaharitam. When offered with devotion, then ashnami prayatatmana, I definitely accept it. So the intent is more important than content. Krishna says, if the intent is there, even if the content is very simple, I'll accept it. And we see this same principle in the pastime of Sudama, where he offered, his content was very simple, it was just rice. But the intent was there, and Krishna was so delighted with the intent, so happy about it. So in general, when we give gifts, the intent is extremely important. Our goal is not just to show the world that I have given so much. So when we give some gifts, for example, we may give some charity to the temple. So now when we give charity, our goal should not be to tell the world, see how much charity I have given. You know, we cannot get pure devotion by mere donation. And donation is important, it's a part of bhakti. But by donation we cannot get pure devotion. Pure devotion will come by the practice of bhakti. And that involves one aspect of his donation, but essentially it's the direction of our consciousness towards Krishna, the movement of our consciousness towards Krishna. So actually speaking, if our intention is not to glorify Krishna so much, it is intentional to glorify our own fame as a charitable person, then our consciousness doesn't really go towards Krishna. See, the whole idea of giving a gift. Now, I'm talking first about Krishna, then we'll talk about devotees also. When we give a gift to Krishna, the whole point, we don't call it as a gift, because who are we to give any gift to Krishna? Everything that we have belongs to Krishna only. So whenever we give something to Krishna, So at that time, we can call it a gift because it's a way of affection. But philosophically speaking, ultimately, we're simply returning to Krishna what belongs to him. So when we give charity to Krishna's mission or Krishna's cause, at that time, you know, that is the way we are offering our heart to Krishna. The whole principle of bhakti is that we have to offer our heart to Krishna. And if we can't offer our heart to Krishna, then we offer what is in our heart to Krishna. That's what does it mean? In our heart there is money. That's what normally happens with everyone in the world. It's inevitable. So many concerns, oh, I have to earn this much, if I put money this much, it'll get here, this will cost this much, it'll cost this much. So attachment to money is there. So what do we do? If the worldly concerns are completely packing and crowding our heart, then we sacrifice that for Krishna. So when we can't offer our heart to Krishna, at least we offer what is in our heart to Krishna. What is in our heart is money. So by offering money, what are we doing? We are offering a part of our heart to Krishna because we are attached to money. So when we offer a part of our heart to Krishna, by that Krishna gets a part of our heart. That means we give Krishna a place in our, I did this particular service for Krishna. And that way we get connected with Krishna. Generally speaking, if we are attached to money, then we will be concerned how we are spending the money. So if you are giving the money to Krishna's cause, then we remember that. And that's how our Krishna connection also develops. So the whole purpose is to direct our heart's flow towards Krishna. So giving gifts is one way of doing that. Now when we give gifts, if we give it for the sake of broadcasting the fame to the world, I give so much charity, then what is happening? Actually, sometimes, you know, if you throw a ball at a wall, then the ball goes to the wall, and tuck, it comes back again. The harder we hit it, the faster it comes back. So like that, Krishna becomes simply a ball where we toss our, becomes a wall where we toss our consciousness and our consciousness comes back then. That means our consciousness doesn't go towards Krishna because we are not really attracted towards Krishna so much. Our goal is, okay, by offering something to Krishna, everybody will come to know and then I'll be declared to be a famous person. I'll become famous, a charitable person. When that happens, then unfortunately, surely because we are offering the charity to Krishna, we'll make some spiritual advancement. But we will not make as much as we could have. So, that's why Tadati. So the intent should be to actually please Krishna, not to necessarily, promote our own glories. Now, of course, there are situations when devotees may even have their names published. Okay, I gave this much donation. That will vary depending on person. Sometimes it may be that by telling, okay, this person has given this much donation, others will also be inspired to give. So putting the name there is fine. And some people may really want that. Somehow they want the fame. And they want that. Okay, if I am giving donation, the name should come. Then that's what we want, we can give them. But gradually they can also be encouraged through philosophical education, through love and culture, to rise to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. So when you are talking about this, we are not talking about this about how to judge others. Why this person want his name to be there? We shouldn't think like that. We are talking for ourselves. How we can direct our heart to Krishna. What is happening between that person and Krishna is their mutual business. Krishna will take care of that. I don't have to put my head in that. So, dadati pratigrahanati. So, intent is important. But when the intent is there, then the content will also be as best as is possible. Because if I love someone and the loving intention is there, naturally I want to offer that person the best. Now, a mother who loves a child, it is not that the mother will say, oh, child, I love you. The intent is there. So I'll give you some soup and I'm going to eat this big feast. She will not do that. Because intent automatically shapes the content. So when we say that the intent is more important than the content, the point is that when a very attractive, when attractive content is not possible, then if Krishna is satisfied even with the content, with the simple content, if the intent is there. But from our side, we should think that the intent has to be there, and along with the intent, the content should also be there. And what is the content? The content is, Krishna, I will try to offer you as nice things as possible. And something similar applies to devotees. Now when we give gifts to devotees, No, we actually, different people value different things. So depending on what people value, we can think about those people and then plan a gift accordingly. So some people like words of appreciation. Actually, everybody likes words of appreciation, but for some people, words of appreciation are most important. For others, physical presence when they need or just seeing each other is important. So being there for their important occasions, that's what is most important. For others, certain tangible gifts are more important. Your comfort, what have you brought? So, you know, different people, these are called as love languages. Different people have different love languages. That means they perceive love in different things. So you have to find out, if we really care for some devotee, then we want to deepen the relationships with them. We have to find out what is it that they care for? What is it they value most? What is it that is most important for them? Once we realize that, and then we share in that, and those gifts will be very much cherished, and not just appreciated, but cherished actually. So, and they will create very wonderful bonds. And for this, actually we have to know the person. We know the person and then we give a gift accordingly. So, now this applies within a family also. You know, sometimes when we talk about attachment to devotees, if a family is progressively coming to devotional service, then there can be this reciprocation among the family members also. When you're staying together, that doesn't mean that automatically everything is taken care of. Affection has to be expressed. And these are forums where these can be expressed. So now, there are some traditional ways in which affection is expressed. For example, there are birthdays. So when the birthday of a person is there, at that time, what do we do? Naturally, we wish the person, maybe we give some gift. Now, in material circles, birthdays can be very big occasions for big bashes. People have big parties at that times. As devotees, we may not want to do such things. Now, there is one extreme view. The devotees say that, actually, what is the point of birthday? Now, for example, in some Buddhist traditions, they have the idea that we have had so many lives in material existence. That if we looked back and we had memory, then practically every day would be our birthday and every day would be our death day. So we have gone through so many lives. So what is the point of celebrating birthdays? This is a very negationist idea. So there's one devotee who told me, a senior devotee now, he told that he joined the temple in ISKCON in the early days. And then after he had joined the first birthday, his first birthday, he went to the temple and he told the president, Prabhuji, today is my birthday. And the temple leader said, so, how old is your stool bag today? So, how old is your stool bag? So, now this devotee said, he was shocked. But afterwards, I felt grateful. He has freed me from my illusion of infatuation with the body and the day of body's birth. Now, actually speaking, this is quite a cold-hearted attitude. Now, certainly we don't want to identify with the body, but that doesn't mean that we have to reject everything related to the body. So actually speaking, any occasion that can help us to come closer to each other, come closer to Krishna, that can be used. So technically, this is called as a rite of passage, R-I-T-E. Rite means, rite is like a ritual. Rite of passage means that as we are going through the journey of life, as we are passing through various important landmarks, at that time there are certain functions that are done. So traditionally we have the various samskaras. So for example, when the child is born, annaprashan, first child take the first grains, name giving ceremony, like that, there are many ceremonies. These are all rites of passage. So the rites of passage start from garbhadhan and they go on to antisthi, when the cremation is done. These are rites of passage, these are traditional. And the importance of those rites of passage is that they all create devotional impressions. Now, the point of those rites of passage is to help create devotional impressions. So now, if we are born on, brought up in a culture where things are different, where the rites of passage were different, for example, birthdays are very important, then we can utilize those to also bring devotional impressions. There's nothing in principle wrong in that. In fact, being insensitive may be wrong at certain times because we can alienate people by that. So the point here is that we don't want to make a big hullabaloo about the birthday. But at the same time, these are by the culture in which we live, by our own inner feelings, these are considered important, and our hearts are soft on that day. So at that time, some words of affection, some words of some gestures of reciprocation, they go deep into the heart. Everybody needs to feel valued, loved, cared. And these can be occasions when we can share that value, love and care, and bring each other closer to Krishna. So devotees will try to spiritualize these occasions. And by spiritualizing these occasions, they can all move closer to Krishna. So at the same time, we have to be careful that we don't get so caught up in the birthday celebration, think automatically assuming everything is spiritual. No, because I am a devotee, because you are a devotee, so whatever we do is spiritual. No, we have to endeavor to keep Krishna in the center. But at the same time, it is not that we have to reject everything that is not there in the traditional culture. So celebrating the birthday is a way in which we can do the occasion on which we can do the dati pratigrahanati. But the whole center should be Krishna, and that is wonderful. Now, so as I said, there was the intent and there is the content. So both of them are important. Among the two, what is more important from Krishna's point of view and from devotee's point of view is the intent. So we don't necessarily have to think that, okay, this person, there's so many people, I have to give a gift, this is worth this much, that person will give a gift that is worth this, that much, and that much. We don't have to go into that zone in devotee circles. But still, the intent and the content, when both are there, and that brings a sweetness to the relationship. So there were many stories about how devotee Jayananda Prabhu, when he was the temple president, you know, he was actually the temple in charge, but often he would do the basic services, and he would train young devotees, and they would become leaders under him. So one day devotee did a lot of service for him, and then Jayananda Prabhu has the office. He says, you know, he told the devotee, you go inside the office, open the door, then see something. There is something on the table for you. And you can close the door and you can have it. So the devotee was eager. He went and saw, opened his office and he saw there's a big, beautiful cake for him. And he said, it's all for you, take it. So the cake was wonderful, but what was more wonderful for the devotee was the thoughtfulness, the sweetness of that gesture. So there are small, small ways in which affection can be expressed, and in relationships, small gestures go a long way in deepening relationships. So the terminology of certain things may be modern, but the principles are there in the Vedic literature also. In modern terminology, people use the word called as emotional bank account. Emotional bank, just like we have financial bank account. So there is an emotional bank account. That means that in our every relationship with everyone, we all have credit and debit. So when we are warm and loving and appreciative and have a overall positive interaction, that adds to the emotional bank account balance. And whenever we have a negative interaction, whenever we're critical, whenever we are curt or rude or insensitive, then there's a withdrawal. So there are modern self-help teachers who say that actually we have to make sure that in all our important relationships, the emotional bank account is always on the positive, not on the negative. So how do we do that? We have to be very careful to be able to do that. And that happens by these kind of gestures. So the term may be new, and as soon as we hear a new term, we think, oh, this is very impressive. But actually, what is the new is only the term. The principles are there. What is Rupa Goswami telling over here? He's telling that actually we care for each other, and we express that care through the relishing and sharing of prasad, or gifts, or heart-to-heart discussions. So I'll discuss about Bhunkte Bhojayate first, and then we'll discuss about Guhyam Akhyati Prichyati later, a little bit more. So, Guhyam Bhunkte Bhojayate Chaiva means that we offer prasad and we take prasad. So, we have to understand that prasad is the way devotees are expressing affection to us, and we can express affection to others. So, in devotional life, we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Adat Acharya brought him to his home, and he fed him sumptuous prasadam. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, oh, I am not sannyasi, just give me some lafra manjan. Just give me some simple vegetables. Unspiced sort of vegetables. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, yes, yes. But when he came, it was a huge feast for him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I am sannyasi, I can't take this. He said, no. Actually, this is what Jagannath has taken. This is Jagannath's prasad. How can you say no? And he fed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu opulently. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in Puri, the devotees from Navadvip would come there, and for them the highlight of their visit would be seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And all the devotees, they would wonder, we will get some day when we can offer food to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They would look forward to that opportunity. And that was what bhunkte bhojayate chaiva. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, what he would do is, on special days, for example, the day after Haridas Thakur, on the day which Haridas Thakur departed from the world, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself went around. He said, you know, to various shopkeepers, please give me some charity. No, please give me some food. And when they saw this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed there for years. And the shopkeepers said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was such an exalted person. Many of them knew that he was Supreme Lord. Those who didn't know also, there was this very great sannyasi. He has converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he has converted Prakashan Saraswati. Very great person. They were stunned to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself coming, asking. And they started bringing their whole, as much as they could from their shops to give him. Yeah, because they also realized this is a way in which we can express our regard to the Lord. Then Swarupa Damodar said, no, I will take from you. By the Lord, you can go. And then I will arrange to have this, make all the arrangements for this. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would make the arrangement, would come, and when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself wanted to serve, he said, then Swarupa Damodar said, no, my dear Lord, unless you take food, nobody else will take food. Then they said, okay. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat down, but he said, everybody, serve prasad to everybody. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually knew every devotee's heart, and he knew what that devotee liked. You say, you give him this more, and give him this more, and give him this more. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relished the prasad and wanted everybody else to relish the prasad. He said, they all ate up to their neck. So here, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the sharing of prasad was a way of reciprocating affection. So this is also a very important part of Vaishnava culture. You know, in the same Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Raghunatha Das Goswami is glorified for eating just a little buttermilk once in 3 days, that same Chaitanya Charitamrita also glorifies elaborately the feast that were prepared under the guidance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and how all the devotees ate the feast. And in fact, there are so many items that are mentioned in various places. Sometimes verses and verses, dozens and dozens of verses describing just the recipes that were cooked and carried and served. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes in some cases in the purport that, you know, our ISKCON devotees should learn all these recipes, and they should also integrate it into the ISKCON cuisine. So the idea is that this is a culture. Bhakti is not a dry spirituality. It is very engaged spirituality. And we see this goes on at the highest spiritual level also. When Radharani is cooking for Krishna, it is said that she cooks simultaneously on 50 stoves. Now, simultaneously, this item, she is running from one stove to another, cooking, offering the best food to Krishna. And she cooks everything to perfection. So that is the way, through food, she is offering her heart's love to Krishna. So we should not just, as devotees, we don't see food just as a item to be eaten. We see food as a way in which Krishna and his devotees are giving mercy to us. So actually, what is the feast? We say love feast. Now, love feast was a word for the Sunday program. We call it love feast. Prabhupada uses that love feast word also in his purport here. So what is the idea of a love feast? That was a word which came from the hippie jargon at that time when Prabhupada started the movement in 1966. But the idea is that the devotees cook the feast, and when the devotees cook the feast, they are putting their love in it, they are putting their bhakti, and then Krishna feasts on that bhakti, and then Krishna fills the prasad, transforms the bhoga into prasad, fills it with mercy, and the devotees feast on the mercy. So this is the actual reciprocation of love. And so actually there are devotees who cook, so the Krishna feasts on their love, on their bhakti, and then Krishna surcharges the food with his mercy. And when all the devotee community gets the prasad, what are they getting? They are getting the bhakti of the devotees who have cooked along with the mercy of Krishna. And then there is such intense reciprocation of love over there. So the whole culture is of taking prasad with love. Now, at the same time, we have to know that it should be a priti lakshanam. It should not become a lobha lakshanam. That means, when we take prasad, the prasad should be taken in the mood that this is Krishna's mercy, this is the devotee's affection that I am reciprocating. But you see, the same book, we see the paradox over here. Earlier in the same book, what has been said? Vacho vegam, jivha vegam, it is talked about. Oh, and then atyahara has also been talked about. So don't eat too much, control the jiva vega. It is talked about, and now it is also saying that bhungte bhojaye te chaiva priti lakshanam. The idea is that actually we cannot relish even material things properly if we are not in control of our senses. Sometimes if we are too greedy for eating something, we are eating one item and that is delicious, but we are looking around, what is the next item coming? What is the next item coming? What is the next item coming? Hey, that person has got, but I have not got till now. That person has got two helpings, why he gave me only one helping? Now that person, he gave the sweet, that person gave a full spoon, me he gave only half spoon, why? So what happens is that if we don't have a basic level of control of atyaha, control of jiva vega, then we cannot even relish things materially, what to speak of spiritually. So here when he's talking about bhungte bhojayate chaiva, it is already understood that one is not having uncontrolled senses. One has controlled senses, and then there can be a reciprocation of affection happening. That reciprocation of affection can be very rich and fulfilling when devotees come together and they take prasad, because they see it as a means by which they are coming closer to each other. So we should not use the Chaitanya Charitamrita's glorification of prasad as a means for, a justification for wanton, unregulated eating. If we have some dietary restrictions, if we have some additional considerations, you know, we have to take this into consideration, because prasad is spiritual and it lacks spiritually, but it is also manifesting through some material elements, so that will also act. So if somebody has diabetes and just because somebody else offers sweet, he takes that sweet, that person will have the consequences. So when we are offering prasadam, as I said, we want to show affection, but we want to show affection in a way that pleases the person to whom we want to show affection. So when we are offering prasad, sometimes we feel, I cook so much, you know, the guest should take it, the devotee should take it. But how can that devotee take? If that devotee has some health concerns or something, then we shouldn't think that, oh, I have to force that devotee to take. You know, both from the receiver's point of view and the giver's point of view, the point of the exchange is to make both of them both enriched in devotion. Oh, there is in the pre-Christian tradition, there was a concept in among the Greeks and the Romans that was called the sin eater. The sin eater is a very peculiar concept, fascinating concept. The idea is that there are certain groups of people, they were not exactly priests, but they are somehow considered holy. And the custom was that if any family did a sinful activity, they would call this person to their house. And then they would feed that person. And the idea was that person would eat, that person, whatever sin they have committed, that person is eating the sin. And the reaction for that sin will go to them. So what happens is many times we have the idea that if we invite some devotees to our house, especially if they are enunciates, then the whole idea is that the more they eat, the more our sin is going away. So therefore, many people want to invite sadhus and feed them. But as devotees, we should not be thinking about sin. We should be thinking about reciprocation of love. And the idea of sin says you should eat more and more. Why? Because more of my sin will go away. That is not the idea which devotees have. Devotees, when even the renunciates come to some grihastha's houses, grihastha's invite them, the whole idea is there should be a reciprocation of devotional affection. And by that, both will move forward, move higher in devotional service. Sannyasi is doing the duty, grihastha's are doing the duty. And like that, it can be within the devotee community at all levels. And by this, we can all move towards Krishna. By, as Prabhupada would say, we can chant Hare Krishna, we can dance, we can feast, and we'll move back to Krishna. Thank you very much. Shubh Desha Amrit Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.